Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Brakes Plus. Let's see if you've been paying attention this morning, Mark Schlereth.
Ooh.
This one comes in from Avsman. I know you love questions from Avsman.
Yeah, oh yeah, I love it.
Question mark, are you nervous about the Avalanche winning the President's Cup, considering the team who has won the best record in the league hasn't won the Stanley Cup in many years?
Yeah, but the last time the Avs won the Stanley Cup, they won the President's Cup.
Ah, yes, you were paying attention.
So pound sand, Avsman.
There you go. Way to pay attention.
Right.
He is right. Winning the President's Trophy for the best record in the NHL during the regular season has not at all translated to Stanley Cup success. But yes, the last time the Avalanche won the President's Trophy, they won the Stanley Cup in 2001. And they can win the President's Trophy with a win over the Kings tonight. So yes, do not be afraid of it. Do not be afraid of it. I do not think it would be something that would, put some bullseye on the Avs back that they couldn't back up.
By the way, I got something from 616 here, 9541, whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but hash brown sent it to the internet, so I want to put it on.
Oh,
just last week.
Goes to the front line?
Yeah, last week you were agreeing with Mike that they were going to delay the schedule release, which I thought they might because of Aaron Rodgers, right? Well, you and I both talked about that. They did not do that. Now you're saying all these things are done in advance. You know, the NFL puts the winning teams on, blah, 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 blah. No, that was the wrong one. I'm sorry, just skipped on me. But you're saying they're all done in advance. You're a hypocrite type of thing, right? That was kind of the gist of it. They were all done before. I did get a call from the people who schedule about Aaron Rodgers and how are we going to manipulate the schedule. I was told during that phone call that they actually had 6 primetime games. And ultimately, they moved the Packers down to 5 primetime games. So they did manipulate. I think they did manipulate it. Maybe I was wrong on that information. Maybe they didn't have 6. Maybe they had 5 primetime games. But there are some outs. Like the weekend that the Cowboys play the Broncos, that's the same weekend Green Bay plays the Chiefs. So that would be an easily manipulated game of switching the power. But The truth is, again, is that the schedule was set, but they were concerned about trying to move some primetime matchup games. There wasn't enough information to do it, obviously. So, you know, the Green Bay put the kibosh to trade talks and are trying to work things out with Aaron Rodgers. But there are some situations in this roster where you can easily see kind of a swap down the road.
Well, there are rules. Okay, there are guidelines in place, and I'm reading right from the NFL site.
Right.
In 2014, flexible scheduling was extended so that games between weeks 5 and 17 could be affected by flex scheduling. However, only 2 games may be flexed into Sunday night between weeks 5 and 10. So starting as early as week 5, you could start flexing games into primetime. In 2023, the NFL will have the option to flex Monday night games beginning in week 12. So, yeah, there are all kinds of rules and schedules. But if the NFL learned anything this past year, they can move games
anywhere they want.
They can move them from this time to that time. They can move it from Thursday to Sunday, they can move it from Sunday to Tuesday or Sunday to Wednesday, and guess what? People watch.
Yes.
Teams adapt. So if Aaron Rodgers gets traded in the next month or two to the Denver Broncos, it'll be no issue at all moving games around into primetime. And suddenly Let's just play the game. He gets traded to the Denver Broncos. Suddenly, the Sunday, November 7th game at the Cowboys is on national television.
Goes to Thursday night. Goes Sunday night.
Sunday night.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower.
One of the Kansas City games.
Absolutely.
Instantly goes to a Sunday or a Monday night.
Yes. 100%.
I mean, there's any number of teams you can, any number of games you could look at.
Right.
You know, game with the Steelers, the Baltimore game. Okay, the Baltimore game here.
Yeah.
Sunday, October 3rd instantly becomes a.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're good. We solved it.
Done.
Easy.
Time now for the Fan Film Room.
Welcome to the Fan Film Room. Drew Lock versus Teddy Bridgewater.
We do like Drew Lock, but we do realize we want competition.
Ready to break down the film on the Broncos quarterback battle. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
That was kind of a jarring bank left thing. Bank left. They'll fly right over us. We just talked about Aaron Rodgers, how that would change everything, and now we're back to Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock.
Yes, we are.
Back to reality. Oh, boy. Here we go. So today it was common opponents, the Kansas City Chiefs. Week 9 for Carolina, week 13 for the Broncos. You're all proud of yourself because something that an NFL coach told you resonated with you as you were watching the Broncos and the Chiefs game. Go ahead.
It's not that I'm proud of myself.
You were proud of yourself because as you were watching, it was like, oh, wait a minute, where have I heard that before? Let me go check my handy-dandy notebook. Oh, there it is!
It wasn't pride. It's just the fact that I did the work. I'm not sorry about it. I mean, you know, when you live on I Told You So Island, what am I supposed to do?
You don't get your own island without putting in the work.
That's right. Yeah, they just don't hand out islands to people.
Yeah. All right, you got your handy-dandy notebook out.
So one of the things, it was interesting. I was in a meeting. The Niners were on the road playing New Orleans. And obviously we know how good the New Orleans Saints are. And, you know, the Niners decimated by injuries, playing with, you know, a quarterback that, you know, just is not capable of greatness. So anyhow, long story short, I'm talking to Robert Saleh, now the head coach of the Jets. And he said something that just stuck in my mind. He said, you'll easily tell what the Saints and Sean Payton think of us in the first series of the game by how they protect, how deep the drops are. You know, what they do in the running game, what they do in the play action game, how quick they're getting the ball out of their quarterback's hands, all those things. He goes, you can easily tell what they think of you. And I am watching the Broncos play the Chiefs, and there is a blatant lack of respect for that offense. I mean, they just lined up in man free and said, hey, number 3 can't beat us. We will line up in press man this whole game, and we will bring extra players, and you can't beat us. You're not going to throw it well enough. You're not going to protect well enough. You're not going to come off your first, you know, your primary target to a secondary target. You're a sight thrower, and we know it, and we're better than you. And we'll play aggressive, either man-free or zero. What are you going to do?
They were right.
100%. I mean, it was to go back through the, you know, very detailed on the coach's film. It was like, wow, they don't even respect you. They're not afraid one iota of anything you do.
Okay. They clearly don't respect, aren't afraid of Locke. Was there anything that smacked of we don't worry about the coordinator either? We don't worry about him being able to adjust and come out at us with something that will make us pay for coming out with this attitude.
Well, I mean, if you can't exploit what they're doing, I mean, if you can't win instantly on press man, and your quarterback isn't getting it to the receivers, like, why would you stop? And I think the other fact is there is so much of locking a half field read, locking on to one dude and trying to throw it to that one guy, that I don't think they really concern themselves with, like, so let me just kind of explain how it works now, more so now than ever. So when you have a concept, you have offenses are built this way. You have a front side concept and a backside concept. So let's say that you're in a formation like south, right, clamp. Okay. So south is a kind of a stacked wide receiver set, X on the ball, F off the ball outside of it. You know, and you're instantly almost like lined up like a slot with a stack. And then the clamp is the tight end off the ball, the Z in a 5-yard split off him. So you've got two kind of more condensed sides. So let's say you're running two jet, this is the protection, and you're running X flag bow. So X flag tells you what the X is doing. He's running a flag, and underneath the flag, you always have a drag china. Okay, so you've got that on one side, and then on the other side, you're running bow, which is a basic, which is a 12-yard in-cutting route with an arrow route, meaning an underneath, just an underneath quick turnaround at 4 yards, work away from leverage. And then you're always got a check flat opposite the protection turn. So it's two jet, you're sliding to the left, you got check flat by the back on the outside, right?
Okay.
So what you want to do is you want to read front side to back side. You're not going 1-2, let me read that, then let me read 3-4, whatever it is. Just go front side, back side. And that's why quarterbacks in today's game get the ball out of their hands so quickly. And what you see consistently is Drew Lock will look at, if you're in a 2x2 formation, you'll look at that 2x and you'll never come off it.
Right.
So let's say you've got that basic coming across, or let's say you're running drive. So you've got a basic with a shallow cross underneath it, right? So, and that's the route combination, and that shallow cross is coming wide open, but you never come off the front side. You're waiting for that front side to open, and you wait to the point where you're pressured. And it's pretty consistent when you look at it. Now, again, can all that change? Can all that get better? Absolutely.
Because all of you in college was one read, two at the most.
Yeah, you get into a lot of that stuff. So when you watch it on film, like, there's a couple of things that are apparent. You don't have pocket feel, and you don't have great awareness of what your protection is, where you're protected. So a lot of times you'll see him fall back, and you'll see him fall back. They'll bring two off an edge, right? And you know that you're not protected on the outside one. The tackle has the inside guy, right? But they're both rushing upfield. In that, you automatically have to climb the pocket. Your unprotected outside got to climb. If you back out of the pocket, guess what's going to happen? You're going to hit right between the numbers or right in the back. And you see him just fall out and not step up, and you're falling out to where you're unprotected. And this is a consistent theme that you're watching.
Yep.
And it was really apparent against Kansas City, because Kansas City said, dude, I don't know how much man they played, but they played a boatload of just straight up press man.
Okay, so they showed no respect for Locke. Fine, I get it. Playing that kind of press man, you would think that these talented pass catchers, receivers would love the idea of press man, because beat the guy off the line of scrimmage and you're open.
Sure.
Did you see that happening? Were these guys winning?
No, they weren't consistently winning their routes. And here's the problem. And when they did win their routes, you're falling into pressure.
Right.
You got five to block, they're bringing six. You got six to block, they're bringing seven. They're just like, they're bringing pressure, right? And you are either you don't understand where it's coming from, you just, you can't, you don't process it, you're processing too many other things. This is all part of being a young player, mm-hmm. too, that can certainly get better. There's no question.
What has to happen first? What's the biggest thing that he has to improve upon to not seem to be bothered so much by not even real pressure, perceived pressure?
Right. I think, Mike, one of the things that has to happen is, like, when you break a huddle, you've got to be able to visualize exactly what you have, like, all over the field. And if you don't like your first look instantly, you got to get somewhere else. The whole principle of offense, if you want to just boil it down to its simplest form, throw it where they ain't. Right? I mean, and I just think there's a lot of that stuff that you get locked in on a side or a guy, and you're going to throw it regardless. He threw a pick on something that if you just get off, it's completely covered. You know, they're in, man. They got a, I can't remember exactly what the pick was, but it there's no way you should force it. And you've got some pressure, and you got a shallow, you know, you got a shallow crosser that's coming wide open. You never see it. You don't. And that to me is, I'm so focused on one person or one guy or one concept that I don't have great awareness of the time, the clock in my head that I should have, where the pressure is coming from, how to take my set, how to take my drop and actually drop away from where I'm unprotected. Like it's all the nuanced stuff. And part of that, Mike, is obviously part of that is you didn't practice. Right. You don't have the OTA, all that stuff.
So I look at Bridgewater in his game against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a guy that does go through his reads, doesn't mm-hmm. panic. And his head moves quickly enough that if first guy isn't open, he'll mm-hmm. search out somebody else to try to throw the football.
Yes.
Do you see the same thing? I don't see a guy. I very rarely this week in watching, now we've watched what, four games of Teddy mm-hmm. Bridgewater. Very rarely have I seen him just take off because of perceived pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't there.
Yes. Yes.
He's much more poised in that regard.
Yes.
Now, one thing that was very obvious, and this, again, is a continuing theme. Either he can't, doesn't want to, or isn't asked to throw the ball down the field. Check this out. By my count, he had 11 pass attempts before he attempted a pass that went over 10 yards in the air.
Correct.
In the first half alone, I'd say he had two passes in the entire first half. His number, 17 of 23 for 123 yards and two touchdowns in the first half. And those two touchdowns, deceiving. One was a shovel pass to Samuel, who was running in front of him. And the second was a screen pass, a really nice call, on a 4th-and-3 where Christian right. McCaffrey scored a touchdown. But in the first half.
Which was, by the way, a bust on Kansas City.
Okay.
So they were running a book blitz, meaning on one side, Christian McCaffrey was on the side that Tyrann Mathieu was on. And so he's blitzing on that side. And there's another guy on the opposite side that's blitzing the other side. And depending on where Christian McCaffrey releases, that guy pulls off his blitz and is supposed to be in man coverage. So Christian McCaffrey crossed the ball as Tyrann Mathieu came in, and the other dude just kept rushing. So he peeled out, but by that time he had to cross the formation. So, and he gets beat for a touchdown. He's looking, he turns around and looks at the other guy like, dude, he came out your side. You're supposed to peel off and cover him, and I'm supposed to continue on my blitz. So you could tell it was a busted coverage.
But out of the first half, out of those 23 pass attempts, I only saw two that.
Yeah.
Traveled more than 15 yards in the air.
What's
the deal? Because that's a recurring theme throughout the week. He either can't, doesn't want to, or isn't asked to. What's the answer?
I think it's driving the ball is not his strongest suit. I think, but it's not Teddy Bridgewater. I think as an offense, they realize they can't hold up. They can't hold up to get the deep crossing routes and all that stuff unless they're running it out of play action. So they can't just, they just can't run seven step drops or five step drops with a hitch because they don't feel like they can hold up.
All right. So if Pat Shurmur looks at Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes.
Is there any part of Pat Shurmur that can look at Teddy Bridgewater and say, I've got what I think is a better offensive line than we've had before. I have a running back, let's say a Melvin Gordon that I trust to be able to pick up. Let's pick up. And I have a fleet of pass catchers that allow me to go 4 or 5 wide a lot of times. We're going to go down the field and Teddy Bridgewater can get the ball to these guys. He'll have the time. If given the time, he can be an effective down the field thrower. You think Pat Shurmur sees that?
Absolutely. You've seen Teddy Bridgewater hit the sideline throws. You've seen him. He doesn't take them very often. They're not designed very often. But they run a lot of condensed formation, shallow cross. You know, that's what that's just what they run. And I think most of it was trying to mitigate a group up front that wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that was we don't have a great running game. Christian McCaffrey was hurt. We don't have an identity in that. We're trying to figure out what we are, what we can be. I think most of that was trying to mitigate a bad offensive line than it was, hey, our quarterback can't make that throw.
Okay, that's good. That's encouraging.
Right.
Last thing for me, and I kept seeing it this week with Locke and Bridgewater, and I'm not just dumping on these two because you see it all around the NFL uh-huh. now, and I need an answer because you talk to NFL coaches, you talk to coordinators, you talk to quarterbacks every single week. Have you been given an answer why the league now feels that on 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 7, we throw short of the sticks? Because it's an epidemic I see around the NFL now, and I saw it a bunch of times this week. Where is the rationale? Where are the analytics that say it's 3rd and 8, I'm going to throw the ball 4 or 5 yards short of the sticks as an attempt to get a first down? What is the thinking there? Because it makes no sense to me.
The thinking is we are not good enough anymore. We don't practice anymore of being able to hold up in protection, and we can't. The athletes are better, and we're not as skilled. It's the number one skill in football. I mean, I tell you this all the time. Name me one other sport where unlike athletes are matched up against each other, and if the worst athlete gets busted or gets beat, he sucks and the other guy is great. Like when you get caught in a switch in the NBA and a 7-footer dunks over your head and you're a 6'2" guard, you don't say, man, that guard can't play a lick of defense. You talk about what a great switch it was. That's every play when you're an offensive lineman. And the skill set isn't good enough anymore to be able to hold up to push the ball down the field. So what they try to do is they try to get you matched up in man. They try to rub and pick guys, and they try to throw it on the run and let you convert. And a lot of these receivers now, after the catch, are much better. They're like the underneath guys are much better at run and catch guys than they've been in the past. And so that's kind of, I think that's the theory behind it.
Okay. That'll do it for the Fan Film Room. We'll have another one coming up tomorrow. Coming up next, the professor, John Clayton, joins us to give us his impressions of the Broncos schedule. He joins us next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
All right, we'll get to John Clayton here in a little bit. On the text line, robmuslove.com text line, 303-713-1043. Typical stink negativity. All that talk about the Chiefs game and no mention about how the Broncos played them tough and kept it close. What's the 22-16 game?
Defensively, they played real well.
Yeah, held Patrick Mahomes 25 of 40 for 318 yards.
I wasn't asked. We were tasked simply with looking at Drew Lock and his throwing efficiency.
Correct. He was 15 of 28 for 151 yards, two touchdowns, two picks.
Yeah.
Again, wasn't sacked.
Dude, under duress the whole day.
Under duress because he was under duress or under duress that he put himself into?
Under duress because he was under duress, and some he put himself into. But like this whole narrative that this offensive line was really good is false. It's just false. Now you can look at your Pro Football Focus, whatever, feel free to look at that garbage. But it's just false. Now, understand that you had guys like, Schlotsky's Deli was playing.
Austin Schlottman.
Whoever's playing right.
Mutai.
Playing right tackle. I think it was
Calvin
still
Anderson.
Dotson at that
Dotson,
time.
Dotson, yeah. It was a revolving door, yeah.
Yeah, they had, and Kush is a rookie that, because they drafted him in the third round, you thought he was going to be a superstar. I distinctly remember some kind of nonsense like that.
Well, I was high on the pick because he was a third round pick, maybe the second best center in the draft, and he had just come off a great season with LSU. Again, he went in the third round.
Right.
That's a starter's round. You pick somebody in the third round, so with the idea you think that at some point, immediately or at some point, he's going to be a starter for you. Okay? Yeah,
he's got to be a lot better.
Okay.
He's got to be a lot better.
That's fine, but.
But the narrative of, oh, we're fine there. We're fine. There's nothing to see here. Is that, it's false. It's false. They've got to make significant improvements.
Okay,
and a lot of that, let me just preface this by saying, a lot of that goes to who's calling your plays.
Correct. And who's your quarterback? Because one thing we learned with Peyton here is that he'll make your offensive line look better than it really is.
Sure, because he'll get the ball out on time to the right receiver. He won't hold the ball and wait for somebody else to come open. All that kind of stuff.
All right, so bottom line, you got Bolsey, who everybody agrees had a breakthrough year. You got the cooler. You got Kush. You got Glasgow, who they went out and you didn't hate the Glasgow pick.
Right.
You think that even the guy they went out and signed yesterday to play right tackle, Bobby Massey, was a good solid pickup.
Yeah, it's a good solid sign.
They've developed now some depth that they haven't had for a long time the offensive line.
Well, like, where are you going with this?
And the Wilderness Warrior. Mm-hmm. And I got to ask, is this offensive line now in your mind, and you are the harshest, toughest grader when it comes to offensive line play.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you remind me of my third grade teacher, Mrs. Hurley. Boy, she was...
Mrs. Hurley?
Mrs. Hurley.
Hurley?
Hurley. She was old school.
Really?
Old school.
Are those Mrs. Hurley's khakis you're wearing right now?
I have no idea how that fits.
I don't know either, but...
He was hard-nosed.
Yeah.
But do you think this offensive line is better?
On paper?
Yes.
Again, you realize we don't play on paper,
I know
right?
that.
Okay, I'm just, go ahead.
All right, John Clayton joins us. Thank God John is here. John, thank you so much for saving me. As we are joined by the fan senior Broncos writer from DenverFan.com, John Clayton, presented by Flesh and Beck Law Injury Attorneys. All right, all we have to do when it comes to this schedule right now, John, is go by what's on paper. You saw the Broncos schedule. How's it shape up for you?
It's the fifth easiest schedule in the league, so that does help out. And particularly, getting the fourth place game as far as that last game being added for the 17th game. I think that works out pretty well. So I think that schedule-wise, it works out pretty well.
Yeah, Johnny, how do you look at these? I always have a tough time going through these, like we did back in our days at ESPN, going kind of back and forth. I think that could be a win. I always just kind of look at the team in general and say, what are they? How do you kind of look at the schedule, look at that schedule toughness, like the win percentage and all that, and then juxtapose that to, hey, there's the 35% turnover in roster, and like how do you kind of kind of parse all that stuff out?
Well, again, this is a different year, obviously, with the tight cap situation down 8% to 182.5. But the impact is going to be more as far as the schedule in the NFC, because you're going to have more down teams in the NFC. Like, for example, you know, New Orleans, Philadelphia. I mean, they've been considered to be playoff-type teams. Well, Philadelphia, maybe not last year. But, you know, they've had to take such cap hits and all those different things. But in the AFC, it's a little bit tougher because, again, all these teams have young quarterbacks for the most part, and those teams are rising. I mean, when you have like as many as 10 or 11, you know, young quarterbacks that are under rookie contracts, you have the ability to build more. And so you start to look around, you say, okay, you know, even though the schedule looks good for the Broncos, but there's going to be more drop-off in the NFC. Like, for example, where's Green Bay going to be if Aaron Rodgers is not going to show up? I mean, so they're not going to be a real good team. And you look at, like, in the NFC North, it's like, how good is that division? I mean, Detroit's terrible. Chicago's in a quarterback transition with a coach and a general manager in possibility of getting fired. But then you look over and you see things in the AFC and you see, okay, you know, Pittsburgh and Baltimore, they have the two toughest schedules in the league. And so there's going to be a little bit of a drop off there. But I think right now when you look and you see, okay, the Broncos are sitting there with the fifth easiest schedule, that's positive.
It is positive, but does it immediately ratchet up the pressure on Vic Fangio, who is 0-7 in 2 years in September, to win and win immediately, or thus become maybe the favorite to be the first coach fired?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, and that's why I think you can see that, you know, the George Payton has done a good job of trying to get him as much on defense as he possibly can. And you look at the defense overall, the fact that they've done such a great job in the secondary, getting Kareem Jackson back and, you know, drafting Patrick Surtain, and, you know, who knows even if Patrick's going to be able to play much, but, you know, they were able to go get, you know, Ronald Darby, and Justin Simmons now got his big deal. I mean, defensively, they look pretty good, and, you know, it plays to the strength of Vic, because Vic, you know, has done, at least maybe not as far as winning, but has done a good job as far as being able to get the defense to play well. Now it's a matter of the offense, and so that's going to be the big challenge. Can they get as much out of the offense? And, you know, here's Teddy Bridgewater, or here's going to be Drew Locke. If they can get off to a good start with that good defense, then things should be positive. If not, you're right, there's going to be trouble.
What do you read into the Packers signing Bortles, all the talk about Aaron Rodgers, like, what do you read into that, and what's your gut tell you about where Aaron Rodgers will play this year, or if he will play this year?
Yeah, my gut tells me he'll end up coming to the Broncos in some capacity. And the reason I say that is because, you know, number one, you know, and the thing is, the Bortles thing baffles me, because, you know, get the waiver wire every day, and the waiver wire had Bortles going to Tampa Bay. And it's like, I didn't see any correction on that. But obviously, we now know the Bortles is going to go there. And all that's going to do is anger, you know, him more. It's like, oh, great. I'm really happy to see you didn't give me a receiver. You didn't give me anything last year. And now you come back, you draft a quarterback and trade up for him and Jordan Love. And now you get Blake Bortles. Boy, that makes me feel good about the way this offense is going to be. So I don't see him being there. And, you know, with his fiance being in Boulder, Colorado, I think that you can see that they're going to try to, you know, get the, you know, get a deal done. And, you know, honestly, I think it's going to be a little bit of a discount, because if you're going to be trading Aaron Rodgers in, say, October, and you're looking at, you know, what teams are going to be involved. I mean, is Philadelphia going to be there? They don't have the cap room, I think, to do something. New Orleans can't be there. I don't know if Washington, and I think he'll have a little bit of a voice if he's going someplace where he can go. I think he goes to the Broncos.
Well, the fact that you are almost so nonchalant about him ending here just since, you know, goosebumps, you know, for me, is that you're like, oh, yeah, I think it happens here. But you think you start talking about September, October, so you don't buy the idea that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, you know, June 1st or June 2nd.
No, not at all. I mean, they got to play this out, because, again, it's like he's the franchise. I mean, they still have to take a big cap hit, which they don't have the cap room to be able to really do. Now, certainly with his $14 million salary, it'll clear out some. But right at the moment today, they don't have enough money to sign their draft choices, so they're going to have to make some more moves. And if you get rid of Aaron Rodgers with really no replacement, I don't know if you want to consider Blake Bortles and Jordan Love two good replacements. In fact, you saw the comments by the general manager late last week that he says, well, Jordan Love has a long way to go. was like, yeah, well, you drafted him. You made that mistake. And so I think in the end that Bortles is going to come in there and just anger Rodgers even more. And I can't. And you got to just wait him out.
Mm. All right, Johnny C., man. We appreciate you, buddy. Always great catching up.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there he goes, John Clayton. John Clayton's done. Benny, John Clayton is done. It's over. He's done. He's Sister. Finished with his segment. Oh, Benny. Benny.
He was working the phone.
Kind of like you worked the bone.
You know, he was talking to John Clayton. I know that, but you got to have that ready.
Yeah.
You got to have that ready. John Clayton, presented by Flesh and Peck Law.
Certain standards.
Sorry.
There's certain standards we have here.
Yeah, Benny, we hold you to such high standards.
Yeah, there's certain things we just like to do just because we're not.
You take it for granted, yes, but when it's not there right away, we get a little bit pissy. Presented by Flesh and Peck Law, injury attorneys. Read John's latest on the Broncos every day at denverfan.com. And John Clayton, not the only person who believes strongly that Aaron Rodgers will be a Bronco. More evidence. And obviously, this is the evidence that matters the most. Tell you what it is next. Yeah, you know, I know we've spent all week talking about Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock. And let's face it, the cold water that was poured on a schedule that has the fifth easiest schedule in the NFL, because he still keeps coming back to the idea, well, you know, what are you really going to get out of it with Teddy Bridgewater and
right.
Drew Lock? Then we have John Clayton on, who just nonchalant, just as easy as the summer breeze, says, oh, yeah, I expect Aaron Rodgers to be with the Broncos. I don't think it'll be June, but at some point this season, I expect him to be with the Broncos.
Well,
which, you know, right.
Let me
changes
just,
everything.
Right. Let me just say this in regards to Aaron. Like, the longer they don't mend fences in Green Bay, the longer this every day that this goes on without mending of fences and long-term contracts, the more apt he is to move.
Interesting. So you think it's more the longer it goes, the more he digs in, rather
yes.
than the longer it goes, the more he cools and is open to a kiss and make up?
The longer it goes, the more... For him, it'll be a sign of disrespect. The longer you go on and you cover your bases with Blake Bortles and whoever else you cover your bases with.
Chad Kelly,
the more it will anger Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, it's one thing for John Clayton to believe that Aaron Rodgers ends up with the Broncos.
Correct.
You know, plenty of people can have that opinion. You know what ultimately matters most? You know who a lot of times sends the message, the clearest message? The whales. The sharps.
Oh, I thought you meant...
Benny, tell me you got that.
That's my...
Is that your whale poop?
No.
Softer than whale poop?
Yeah, that's Dory. And Dory and when she talked to the whales.
Anyway.
Anywho.
So Darren Revelle, who likes to follow the business of sports.
Darren Revelle.
The most...
I like Darren. Identical. If you put that in the ocean right now, you'd have about 14 female whales just rolling up going, hey, baby. Don't you think?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Please stop.
14. So...
Your world frightens and confuses me.
I don't know. How much time do we have?
I am convinced now that
yes.
the quality of our shows is measured by how many times we play What Are We Talking About? Okay, and
right?
I think today it's been four?
Today.
I think it's four.
Today, like, we started the weekend, like, this is a Friday.
Oh, this is a Friday show.
Oh, this is as loose as it gets right
this
here.
This is the loosest we've been on a Thursday in a long time,
right.
So... It can only mean one thing for Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, anyway, Darren Revelle, let's get back.
Oh, yeah.
So the most bet teams by money bet to win this year's Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
So the teams that rank the highest for the amount of money that's been bet on them to win the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
Okay? No surprise, the Tampa Bay Bucks far and away number one, as 23% of the money bet on who will win the Super Bowl has been bet on the Bradys. Okay?
On the Bradys?
The Bucks.
Okay, yeah.
Number two, the Denver Broncos. Now, it's a minuscule razor-thin edge between like 2 and 5. So the Broncos are second at 7.28%. The Colts, number 3 at 7.27%. The Chiefs at number 4 at 7%. And then you drop down to the Bills.
More money bet on the Broncos
to win the Super Bowl
than the Chiefs.
Yes. Now, understand a lot of people are looking at it like, wow, I can get the Broncos right now at really attractive odds.
Right.
So I think that's what's leading a lot of people to look at it. But the wise guys,
Dude, the wise guys
think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Bronco.
They think he's coming here. There's no question.
The Sharps. We've learned a lot about the Sharps over the last year.
The Whales. The Whales are the big bettors, though. The Sharps are the guys who set the lines.
True.
The Whales are the big bettors.
But
right?
The Whales tend to be... I mean, they're not usually wrong.
Well, they have all the money.
But they bet the biggest amounts. Yes,
right.
The Whales. But the Sharps... Yeah. Sharps kind of give you a sense of where
we are,
where we're at. Oh, here they come.
Oh, my God.
Here come the Whales. Here come all those female whales.
Bring on the whales. There ought to be whales. All those
Last
female
thing.
Whales.
Last thing.
Shaking their little whale hands. Fins or whatever they are back there. What do you call them?
Last Marshals? Thing. We made some comment earlier about how D-Mac, or no, like, oh, yeah, we just got done talking with ultra-negative James Maryland. We're like, wow, see?
Yeah.
D-Mac, this is what happens when you do a vegan diet.
Mm-hmm.
You get really cranky. Be warned.
Oh, yes.
So he regaled us with this. This was his meal last night.
Uh-huh.
Had grass-fed steak as a complement to my meal, primarily plant-based.
Yeah, what's
almond milk, blueberries, water, and a mung bean omelet, which got you and me scrambling to find out what is a mung bean.
Is that like a dung beetle?
So mung beans are small green beans that belong to the legume family, and so you know, yeah, they're you know ultra high in nutrients and everything. But here's the funny thing. I googled mung bean. You know, the first thing that came up.
Mm-hmm.
Do mung beans smell like death?
Right.
So.
Mung beans.
Gosh. Good for you,
ooh.
But smell like death.
Well, if you have grass-fed beef as a side, and you're just eating a big plate of grass, like what's your entree?
Yeah, I...
Mung bean.
Hey,
if
look.
I have to eat mung bean...
Look. I got my cow valve. It's working well.
Yeah.
Everything's checked out good. I only get one turn at this thing. You know, I don't know if I want to be spending my time eating mung beans.
Where do you even buy a mung bean?
My primitive mind can't grasp
these. Where do you even buy a mung bean?
I don't. Am I going to have a mung bean omelet or am I going to have
an omelet
with like sausage and
chicken eggs,
you know, bacon and ham
lay.
And
they shovel it into the sausage.
Throw some onion in there. I'll get a couple of, you'll throw a mushroom in there. Fine. Put a mushroom in there. Maybe even one mung bean to
there
mix in
no,
there with the sausage and the ham.
A mung bean.
No mung beans.
No.
All right. Mung beans.
Get out of here.
Soderbergh.
They're not serving mung beans at Soderbergh.
No, they are not. What do they serve at Soderbergh's?
They serve burgers and soda.
There you go. All right. Speaking of Soderbergh, good luck to the Avs tonight. Take care of business. Beat those woebegone Kings and finish with the best record in hockey and now become officially the team to beat for the Stanley Cup. We'll be back tomorrow with an Is It Just Me Friday. Sandy in Orlando coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.